as great as any university is, they can't be great at all of the different things that a Fortune 500 company needs to educate on, right? They can be great at some things, they can't be great at everything. And also, you know, learners want some set of choice. So I think the unlock was looking at what was happening, these kind of, I wouldn't call them pilots because they were pretty major, but looking at these one-to-one relationships that were being established and saying there actually would be a better way would be to bring a whole marketplace of education, of the best education institutions to partner with companies. That way, students would have more choice, and you could ensure that regardless of the type of program somebody wanted to study, there would be some institution that could help them with that.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hello, hello.
We have been excited for months to have an opportunity to meet with Paul Friedman of Guild Education, and today is the day. Paul is a serial entrepreneur and education leader. He serves as president of the Learning Marketplace at Guild Education. In this role, he guides strategy, product development, policy, partnerships, and other work for a team that's charged with building and cultivating academic partnerships. And they also produce new product offerings that support Guild's mission. Friedman joined Guild, a certified B Corp, on a mission to unlock opportunity for America's workforce through education and training. He joined in 2020 after Guild acquired the Entangled Group, which he co-founded. Paul has founded, managed, and invested in numerous successful education ventures. He's a longtime advocate for the transformative power of education. Paul previously served as CEO of Entangled Group, an educational venture studio. He also has served as CEO of Practice, an innovative video platform used for skills training, which was later sold to Instructure. And Paul has served as CEO of Altius Education, an innovative higher education company. He focused on creating effective, personalized pathways to post-secondary degrees. This was sold to Datamark. As a college student, Paul created Academic Engine, a college recruitment technology company that he later sold to Hobsons Incorporated. Paul has a bachelor's degree in public policy from the University of Chicago, and he lives in Oakland with his wife and two kids. Thank you so much for joining us today, Paul Friedman. Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
I've also been excited, this is just corny, but for these get to know you questions, I had this idea that we could do a calling on 7-year-old Paul, 17-year-old Paul, and 70-year-old Paul, and see what he has to say about a few things. So that's what we're going to open with in our icebreaker section. And first, we're knocking the call on 7-year-old Paul. What is it that you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, at seven, I think I wanted to be president or a firefighter, or maybe a firefighting president.
That is very motivated for a 7-year-old, I think.
Yeah, well, I didn't become either, so there you go.
So now we move forward to the 17-year-old Paul. Time to create that high school yearbook. Paul Friedman, most likely to what?
Not answer that question. I don't think I like at 17 or now, I don't think like I think it was least likely to get pinned down about what I wanted to do. I think at 17, it was all about options.
So when did that change? When did like a light bulb go on to say, I want to do this or I want to do that?
The honest answer is as the end of college was approaching and I started to see people dress up in suits and go to interviews. And I thought, wow, I really don't want to get a real job. And then I ended up, you know, starting a company instead. But that was the moment where I found motivation to do something. I'd always been passionate about education, which we can talk about, but, that was the, you know, decision to be an entrepreneur was to avoid having to work for somebody else.
So that means you still have those moments where you think, when I grow up, I'm going to be a
firefighting president.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, we're calling on 7-year-old Paul now. So you're writing a memoir on your life. Do you have a book title? Well, I hope you have a book title. What is it?
Ouch, that was hard. I did my best. I mean, it's a great question. A couple things. You know, I hope maybe that the memoir isn't finished when I'm 70, because I don't think, you know, I think you get to keep writing your story until your very last breath. And I just hope, you know, that it's like, who knows what the last chapter is going to be, but I hope it's a lot of fun.
And just so you know, 70 is the new 40.
There you go. Well, I'm the old 40, so I'm looking forward to the new 40.
All right, we have to move on to those serious questions, but yours are fun. You have a long history of work as president. Well, look at that. Maybe not a firefighting president of the U.S. or something, but president or CEO of companies in education. From your view in leadership, how has the landscape in education changed throughout your tenure?
Yeah, when I started in education, right, education technology, they didn't call it ed tech. I mean, it wasn't really, it was an area of startup activity that most experienced people told you not to get into. They said that, you know, education institutions don't change very quickly. K-12 will never change. Higher education barely changes. You know, spend your effort and motivation at doing something else. You know, now it, you know, it's gone through cycles, but now as an area of like a business or entrepreneurial activity, it's, you know, one of the hottest. And it's, you know, gone through cycles where it is. But that's, you know, that's only happened, you know, in my tenure. At the beginning, it was really a place that people dissuaded you from working in.
Mm-hmm. So has COVID altered that path of change for higher ed, for example?
COVID is compressed time and space for changes that were happening in education regardless, and probably made what was going to happen over the next decade or two happen, you know, much quicker. So, and it's provided everybody, for better or for worse, across, you know, all of education, some experience of, you know, what online or remote education is. You know, so whether it was the best experience or not is a different question, but at least they can have a mental model for the idea that you can, you know, learn fully assisted through technology. And it's also, from like, you know, a higher education business model perspective, accelerated a lot of changes that were going to happen anyway, but now, you know, just given budgets and given financial pressures, they have to happen sooner.
Tell us about Guild Education.
So Guild Education works with the largest employers in the United States, companies like Walmart, Chipotle, Taco Bell, Disney. And we work with them fundamentally to use the investment that they make in their employees' education strategic for their goals. So we manage their tuition assistance, the investment that they're making in their employees' education, economic mobility. And the real unlock is that this is an area that 82% of employers have tuition benefits. It's something that most big employers do, but it's never been used really to drive strategic outcomes for employers. It's a money that goes out the door that they don't know how to track. Our model is that we connect those employers with the leading universities and education providers across the country that are the best at serving work adult learners. We ensure that the learners are supported with coaching, and we make sure that they're going into programs that unlock value in their lives and in their careers, but also create better value for their employers as well.
So tell us about the aha moment when this idea came to be.
Yeah, so not the founder, but was around the table as an advisor to Rachel, who started the business. And I think the unlock was, you know, some of these relationships were starting to happen in the industry. Certain employers were creating direct relationships with universities, where they were really changing the nature of the way that their investment in their employees' education was working. But that one-to-one relationships, where one employer partners with one university, doesn't necessarily work for the largest employers of the world. Like, there's not, as great as any university is, they can't be great at all of the different things that a Fortune 500 company needs to educate on, right? They can be great at some things, they can't be great at everything. And also, you know, learners want some set of choice. So I think the unlock was looking at what was happening, these kind of, I wouldn't call them pilots because they were pretty major, but looking at these one-to-one relationships that were being established and saying there actually would be a better way, would be to bring a whole marketplace of education, of the best education institutions, to partner with companies. That way students would have more choice, and you could ensure that regardless of the type of program somebody wanted to study, there would be some institution that could help them with that.
That's terrific.
So do you start with the employer? You go to the employers first, or do you approach universities, or a combination of the two?
Yeah, it's a two-sided marketplace. So it's both sides. We work with universities and increasingly kind of non-traditional education programs, you know, some call them boot camps or short form learning. And we partner with those institutions. And then we also partner with large Fortune 500 employers. And really the special sauce is bringing them together, ensuring that students are making great choices about where they need to learn. You know, we have a coaching infrastructure, we have a payments platform, really connecting those two disparate constituencies and then ensuring that the students ultimately get the value is really what we're about.
So do you have an estimate of the number of students who have benefited from this conglomerate?
So the numbers that we talk about publicly are collectively in our employers, we have 3 million total students for which they're eligible to get an investment in their education by their employers, which, you know, I think there's something like 3.5 million teachers in the United States. So it's a, you know, 3 million is a pretty massive number.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's great. Excellent.
Let's talk now about Entangled Group. For this one, you're the president. And so we're curious if you can tell us a little bit about it. And I've noticed that the term education ecosystem is tossed around in there. So if you could also explain what that means.
Yeah. So it was the founder and CEO of Entangled, which sold to Guild, which is how I became the president of Guild. Entangled was an education technology studio. So we built education technology companies. Our model was that we had a education consulting group that worked with leading K-12 organizations, leading universities, leading philanthropies in education, and leading companies. And we work with them as a consulting organization, kind of like a cross between IDEO and McKinsey, D school meets B school. But we worked with them to really solve their problems. And in solving their problems, we recognized problems that weren't just for the people we were working with, but were for the whole education industry. And when we did that, we would actually make companies and build, you know, products and build companies to ultimately serve the education market. We use the word ecosystem a lot, so much that we kind of stopped liking the term internally. But really, it was because we felt that our point of view was that we are the mission of that institution, of that organization, was to try to help the ecosystem of higher education, you know, all of the players, transition from an education system that was really perfected around the needs of a production economy and industrial economy to the education system that we need for a knowledge economy. And that's, you know, that we thought that our role really in that was helping enable that transition and that change.
Awesome.
Fascinating. So we knock around and knock higher education all the time on this podcast. In relation to the rate of change and innovation.
Yep.
What's it like working with educational leaders on innovation projects?
I think that my original throughout my the title of my memoir was going to be Ouch, That Hurts. there are some parts of higher education, of traditional institutions that are incredibly student-centric, are incredibly innovative, and are taking the opportunity to really transform what they're doing, putting the students at the center of their value chain. And those institutions are a pleasure to work with. And they're, it's fun, it's great, it's impactful. And, you know, it's a lot of the universities that we partner at with at Guild, you know, Southern New Hampshire, Bellevue, Brandman, sort of the names that you know around innovation. Unfortunately, there's a lot of higher education institutions that are very resistant to change. You know, I believe don't fully recognize the need to change their business models, their delivery models, their support models to accommodate, you know, a different learner population, you know, mostly an adult learner, or to just accommodate different learning needs that we need in a knowledge economy. And those institutions aren't so much fun to work with necessarily. And I think don't have as you know, a sustainable business model, and will, a lot of them will need to change one way or the other, or find themselves economically at risk.
So what are the greatest fears of those leaders when presented with an idea to do something differently, even though they probably know in the back of their heads, just as you described, this could be a life or death decision for us?
There's always a room at every university where they have all the pictures of the presidents on the wall. And one of the underlying fears of every current president is they don't want to be that last picture. They don't want there to be nobody next
to them.
Yeah.
And that's true. And that kind of fear of what could happen, what if it goes wrong, that does get in the way of a lot of possibilities. With change comes risk. It's natural. Yeah. That being said, I would say that it's a false choice, right? You have a lot of institutions mm-hmm. that if they don't change, if they keep what they're doing the same, they are just as likely, I would say more likely, to end up, you know, with the current president being the last president in the Hall of Presidents. Mm-hmm. And change is the least risky option. And it's also the option that can align their operations and their capabilities for what kind of the world needs of them.
Well, this has been great speaking with Paul Friedman of Guild Education. And the good news is the conversation's not over. So join us next week for part two with Paul Friedman on the Digital to Learn podcast.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.